What's going on, Curiosity Builders? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, visionaries, and changemakers who are on a mission of chasing big ideas, telling epic stories, and leaving living legacies. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative and curious life for some time, I hope you'll learn something new in this podcast and find yourself inspired to break through the barriers that hold you back and keep you stuck from getting your work to work. Why do people do what they do? How can people build emotional and cultural awareness with themselves, others, and the environment around them? What does it mean to have the conviction of your message? These are several questions that today's guest on Getting Work to Work asks as he explores leadership. Errol Dobler is an author and executive coach who combines his past experiences at the FBI and as a Navy SEAL with his leadership process to help teams and organizations solve any problem they face and seek clarity and purpose. In this conversation, Errol shares insights from his book, The Process, Art, and Science of Leadership, what he discovered about the importance of emotional awareness, how cold exposure is a great way to practice leadership, why plans fall apart, and how to work through insecurities. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/441. Errol, welcome to Getting Work to Work. It's wonderful to talk with you today.
Well, likewise, Chris. I appreciate you having me on. I'm excited. Excited to talk about all things leadership.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I love talking about leadership.
Awesome.
So apart from leadership, which we'll get into in a second, what are you endlessly curious about?
Well, as you can imagine, I'm a leadership consultant now. And if I wasn't inherently curious about the very business that I earn a living on, then there'd be a problem. So, the human condition is what I'm constantly curious about. Why people make the decisions they make, why they do the things they do, how often are they doing things consciously and making true conscious decisions and saying things very consciously with intention. You know, as I'm sure we'll talk about down the line, the process of leadership, it's applicable to everybody, but I just love watching how the process that I think every leader should follow, how it manifests itself in each individual person in a very different way. So that's what I'm curious about, the human condition.
Nice. It's interesting. I like the way that you describe that, because as I think about the human condition, I can't help but think about the phrase, the new normal. And it's like, if you really sit with the uncomfortable nature of that thought, what is the new normal? That gets almost at the heart of the human condition, the avoidance of having to go towards something new and to stay in that relative safety and certainty of what is known.
Yeah, or the opposite, or to not go there because you're not fully bought in on it yet. We're not sure what the new normal is right now. And so I think there's no right or wrong, but again, why do people just dive headfirst into this and say, well, yeah, I guess I'm just going to have to be 6 feet apart from everybody for the rest of my life and wear a mask, and that's just it? Or why do some people say, well, I'm not fully there yet. I'm not totally buying it. I've got questions. So yeah, it's again, the process inside that human condition and why we do what we do, it's a consistent process, but it's different in everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. How does leadership facilitate the asking of questions? Because I love that you said, we have to be asking the questions in our own way, in our own time. So how can leaders help us ask questions better?
Well, leaders need to be asking questions first and foremost. Many times we, as leaders, think that we just need to be giving direction all the time. And that's really quite the opposite. When we talk about instilling initiative and autonomy in our people, well, we don't do that by giving direction. Go do this, go do this, go do this. Now, we as leaders have to set forth a clear mission, but then we say, okay, now you tell me how you're going to do it. Come back to me before you start anything and tell me how you're going to do it. And then around that plan, we ask questions. If there's things we disagree with, we don't say things like, well, food for thought, maybe consider doing it this way, because you as a leader gives orders, whether you want to believe that or not.
Yeah.
But if we say things like, well, that's an interesting action you're going to take. What will you do if this thing goes wrong or that thing goes wrong, right? It's a question. Okay. And you truly want to ask those questions to see what your people are going to do and say for several reasons. First, we want to make sure that they're thinking. Right? You've just challenged them on their process, and now you've kind of thrown in a contingency. And if they have an answer for that, well, that's great. That means you can really trust that person to execute their plan because you know they're thinking. Now, if they don't have an answer, it's one or two things. They either truly don't know, in which case your question really provided a lot of information for you. There's some gaps in perhaps this person's knowledge or capabilities, or they just weren't thinking ahead. And now I know that about them. And now I need to continue to ask questions. And basically, to your point, what that'll do is that sets the tone. Now they'll be asking questions. So we have to ask questions first. There always comes a time when we have to say, okay, no more questions. This was what needs to be done, and it needs to be done now. But that is only effective when your general MO is to ask questions around what people are doing and just have them answer, have them always be thinking it. And then, you know, the times when you have to say, like you do in combat, all right, everybody, this is what we're doing. Well, people are going to listen because they say, all right, this must really be important, because normally there's some questions to be asked and we have a dialogue.
Yeah. I love that. When you're describing the role of asking questions, it starts to form a picture of how you define leadership. So from what I glean from what you said, leaders have a mission. They have a vision or somewhere they're headed, but they also are guiding and directing people toward that mission.
That's right.
What else goes into your definition of leadership?
It's funny, because that, you know, it's a question that you always get asked, especially as a leadership consultant, to define leadership. And I used to try to give an answer, a very specific answer. Leadership is this. And and then I became comfortable with saying, there's not one answer to that question. Leadership is a lot of things, okay? And it's a lot of things based on different circumstances. But what I will say that's consistent, right? Whether you think leadership is motivating or inspiring, whether you think it's getting people to do things that they don't want to do, but being happy to do them, whatever it is, right? There's all sorts of, you know, definitions out there. I will say that one consistent is an awareness, an awareness to make, if you can make good leadership decisions, or let me rephrase that, you can't make good leadership decisions unless you have a full awareness of the situation at hand, what's happening within yourself, what's happening within your people, what's happening in the environment. And awareness of all of those things is a constant. Because if you're not aware of those things and you're making decisions based on incomplete information. And now we're just hoping we get the answer right. So again, leadership is so many things. And all of them that you'll hear people say are generally, you know, they're generally important. But I think an awareness, and again, listen to what I said, right? An awareness within ourselves. How are we feeling based on, you know, what are we about to do based on how we're feeling? I need to be aware of that. Because if I'm about to make an overly emotional decision, well, now, thank goodness I'm aware of that. Let me take a step back, right? And likewise with our people. Likewise with the environment, right? You know, a decision in one environment may not be good for a decision in another environment. We can't make that assessment unless we have that awareness. Does that make a little sense, or did I cop out?
No. definitely not. Because what I appreciate about it is you kind of embrace the complicated nature of it by describing all of the different ways. So, like, obviously, leadership in an environment makes sense. Leadership of a team makes sense, or the people around you. But I think too often we don't focus enough on the leadership within. And I love that you emphasize that as well.
Well, and that's got to be first. It's just absolutely has to be first. And when I work with leaders and I give guidance, and that's all I do, I don't tell anybody what to do. I give guidance. I say, I think, you know, I ask questions around that, but it always, always comes down to what's happening inside of your heart and head as a leader before you do or say anything. Mm. You know, what large decisions are you making based on how you're feeling? And then we can work out from there. It's interesting, you know, with my background, I was a Navy SEAL, I was an FBI agent and all these things. And people get surprised when I lead, and I lead very heavily with emotional awareness and recognition.
Why do you think they're surprised?
I think there's a stereotype, for one. When we work in these very, I guess for lack of a better, macho is not the right word, because I guess if we're going to be gender neutral and say macho is a gender neutral term, then it's a very macho job, right? We talk about into the fire, you know, and right. run towards the trouble and things like that. There is an element of that to it. But what people don't realize is that, for example, inside the SEAL teams, especially inside the SEAL teams, while we never sat down and said, let's talk about our emotions and how we're feeling, everything we did was based in emotional awareness, recognition, then what decision are you going to make? And so we said it a little differently. For again, a battlefield evaluation of a leader, how that leader is responding to enemy movement, enemy contact, chaos, it will very rarely come down to the technical aspects of combat. How well are you shooting? How well are you moving? How well are you communicating? It's going to be based around how aware were you of the situation to make the right decisions? And did you show that awareness in a calm and controlled and methodical manner? And that is all nothing more than emotional awareness and recognition. And you know, the leaders in those stressful situations who are yelling and screaming, blah, 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 doing it unconsciously, they get eviscerated in evaluations, which is not to say that sometimes we don't have to act overly emotional, yell and scream to get somebody's attention, especially in some of those chaotic environments. But as long as that's an intentional decision, once again, based on the situational awareness, that person is stuck, that person is afraid, that person's not listening to what I'm saying, I need to get over to them and wake them up. And the best way to do that is to yell and scream to get their attention, shake them out of it, right? But that's, once again, situational awareness. If I'm doing that to people who are completely aware, completely calm, listening, well, now I'm just coming across wrong and I'm creating stress where there doesn't need to be any, right? So again, it goes back to that awareness. So, but again, that's kind of a long drawn out answer as to why I think people are surprised with my background, why I lead with emotions, because it's just not something I think that people are aware how much thought goes into it.
Well, and I mean, we're still human beings, regardless of what we're doing. So we have to learn how to be aware of our emotions and, I guess, manage them in healthy ways for ourselves and the people around us. So I'm curious, what are some of the tools that you share that enable that awareness of their emotions?
I've developed a leadership process based on my experience. And that process, I call it the process, art, and science of leadership. And there's a process, right? We have five elements. Any challenge you face will be found inside of one of those elements, but you'll have to go through all of them first. And then the art. So again, I say the first element is emotional awareness and recognition. Well, the art to that is, you know, how you handle your emotions and the challenges you have with different emotions are going to be are different than mine. So we need to, you know, we need to really understand from a personal level what the challenges are and how we apply that principle of emotional awareness and recognition, for example, to people. And then there's a science, right? I find my leadership process does follow the science of how the brain kind of rewires itself, which begins with that recognition. So how do I enable people to do this? Well, the first thing is just to say, this is, if you're going to work with me, this is the first thing we're going to talk about. And let's just say you go through one of my, you know, executive programs where we're working together one-on-one, you know, we're going to spend a whole week on just awareness and acknowledgement, and and we're going to make it a habit, and we're going to practice it through things like cold exposure. But, you know, how do I bring it to people? What tools do I use? I use the process that I developed to explain to everybody that this is the first step, right? We cannot skip this step, because if we go to, all right, you know, guidelines for behavior, which is later in the process, you know, defining how we want to behave, well, you might be defining a behavioral guideline that you expect from yourself or your team based on an emotion that you haven't acknowledged. And now we've got the wrong behavioral guidelines that we're going to be holding people accountable to. And now we're just off to the wrong start. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. I appreciate kind of the preview of what's to come with the process, art and science of leadership.
Right.
One thing you mentioned, I'm totally curious about this, but you mentioned cold exposure. Mm-hmm. Like, is that like getting in the shower on the coldest, you know, for a few minutes,
yeah.
Ice bath? I mean, what, taking a dip in the Antarctica,
you right. know, 100%, all those things. So I'm a certified Wim Hof instructor. And for people who don't know Wim Hof, was described as kind of this Dutch extreme athlete. But Wim Hof basically started challenging the scientific community, saying, you've led us astray. Mm-hmm. You've convinced us that our body can't heal itself. Our body and our mind, we can't heal ourselves, that we've got to rely on these medications now. And he said, you're wrong. You've led us astray. And what he did was, to get their attention, he did things like sat in an ice water for 2 hours without his core body temperature changing, climbed Mount Everest in a pair of shorts, ran a marathon in the desert with no water. And then eventually the scientific community said, okay, we have to learn more about this. And then he showed how he can control his innate immune system, his autonomic nervous system, by just the breathing and mindset alone and ward off infection. And that's, you know, that's a broad stroke. In any event, that part of that process involves cold exposure. And that and says getting into an ice bath or a cold shower, mm-hmm. and then all the mental and emotional and physiological things that it can do for you, and how you learn how to, again, we talk about emotional awareness and recognition. It's a tool to practice something like mm-hmm. that. And that goes for every element of my leadership process. Cold exposure is a wonderful intellectual tool to practice these elements of a leadership process. Mm-hmm. Because again, how do you practice leadership?
You know, exactly.
It's right. It's scary. Like, well, I have an idea. I guess I have to just try it.
Yeah.
Now you're like, well, I hope those consequences aren't too bad, you know, if I get it wrong. We can practice the elements of the awareness that goes into our decision-making process. And we can practice a decision-making process simply by getting into an ice bath. And mm-hmm. so that's how I use it. I use it as an intellectual tool among other things, but from a leadership standpoint, that's how I really kind of use that knowledge and experience I have with people who are just looking to up their leadership game.
Yeah. That's fascinating, because as you're describing it, I'm imagining the last time I took a cold shower intentionally, where, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to see what happens when I turn it all the way down. And, you know, I couldn't stand it very long, because your body initially goes into that shock feeling of just like, you know,
right.
So then,
right.
you know, what do you do once you get through the shock? And I love that connection to leadership. What happens after the shock of whatever happens?
That's it, right? So if the first thing, when we talk about awareness, right, there's going to be a few things that happen when you either get into an ice bath or a cold shower. You're going to have an emotion. And you are going to do something,
right?
You are either you're going to yell and scream like a banshee. You're going to curse, right? Your mind is going to go somewhere. Oh, I can't take this anymore. I got to get out. Why am I doing it?
Yeah.
Okay. Trust me when I tell you, it will parallel to a very large degree the things you generally do and think and feel in moments of chaos in your life. So now all of a sudden, when you practice that awareness, right? Because of everything you just said.
Yeah.
All the things that just happened to you, imagine now in a moment of true chaos in real life, you now have the tools to say, I recognize how I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. And I was about to act on that emotion by doing the things like yelling and screaming or making inane comments like I do sometimes when I'm in a cold shower. But now you're aware of that tendency. You have the awareness. Now you get to go to, let me decide how I want to act. What are my behavioral guidelines? And now your brain starts to rewire itself. Now let me make a plan. And that's how. So you really just culminated everything as far as that being an intellectual tool for leadership mm-hmm. in just you describing, oh my God, a couple of times I've done it consciously. Look at what happened to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I always love it when you can connect just what you're talking about with experiences that I've had. That's great.
Yeah. Good. And the stories around people, you know, doing the cold exposure are always the same, but it's only the people who really, you know, you have to have intention with it. You have to know I'm going in today to see what I do, right? See, cultural awareness and recognition. Culture is what we do, not what we say, not the labels we put on it. So, all right, let me just see what I do before I get into the cold shower. I walk around in circles. I start to look for other things to do before I actually get in. I check my phone. I check my messages. I do everything except get in, right? And now when you're aware of that, you think to yourself, boy, that is not a great behavior when I don't want to do something. So now what can I decide to do? So yeah, but only people who actually go through it with an honest awareness of what they do can they get something out of it. A lot of people struggle with that because people hate the cold. I hate the cold more than anything in the world. You know, the seminars, just the straight Wim Hof seminars I give, I always ask, who here hates the cold more than anybody in the world? And there's always five people who raise their hand. And I'm like, wow, it's funny. I just meet you at every seminar the same, but it's always different people who hate the cold more than anybody. So yeah.
I'm so fascinated, Errol, with what you're talking about. And, you know, you dropped some hints of your journey from, you know, Navy SEALs to the FBI to your work in Wim Hof. And what are some other highlights that inform the work that you're doing today?
There's a lot. I mean, you know, if you talk about what it is that got me to where I am now based on my past, there's a lot of things. I tell the story. I try not to talk about too much when I was a leader growing up. You know what I mean? I try not to do that because people want to talk about them. But I will say this. When I played hockey growing up, I started at a real young age. I was 4. Wow. So by the time I was 6 or 7, it's like, you know, you're a vet at that age. And so I was, you know, the captain of the 8-under team, you know, when I was younger. And that doesn't really mean much, right? Because they're just kids. You're just doing your thing. And I remember one time before a game, my dad said, so what are you going to say to the boys, Errol? And now, mind you, I'm like 6 or 7 years old. And I said, what do you mean, what am I going to say to the boys? I don't even know what you're talking about. And he goes, well, you're the captain. They expect to hear from you. You're setting the tone. Now, you know, my dad was, you know, my dad is my idol, but he wasn't some dynamic leader doing, you know, these things. He worked an ordinary job. He was a lobbyist for a, you know, for the electric company in New York. But that's kind of where it started. And it was weird. And so when you get that put in your head at that young age, now you're thinking that all the time. But what I will say is the things that drove where I am today were not the kind of cool things on my resume. And I get it. They're cool, right? Being a SEAL was cool. Being an FBI agent was cool. And all the things I did inside of those things was cool. Even, you know, the leadership consulting job is cool. I get to meet really interesting people. I travel all over the place and you get to make real impact in people's lives. But I think I started to focus, and in the book, I didn't focus on the cool things. I focused on really all the things that I did poorly, right? And that's really important for people. I just wanted them to know, like, I'm not going to tell you all the things to do because I think I'm great. I'm going to tell you all the things that I messed up that now you can trust. When I recommend you do this, you can trust me that that's coming from a place of true experience. Right? This is how badly I did it. And this is how badly it affected me. And this is where the consequences, because I didn't do these things. I think all the bad things and the screw ups in my life is really what kind of drives the work I do today, because I think people can relate to them. And when I put that out there to them, there's a trust that's built that I'm not thinking I'm something special just because you're coming to me for some guidance, right? It's coming from the heart and it's coming from a place of knowledge.
Yeah. I love that connection to making mistakes, because it's hard to make mistakes today, especially, I mean, apart from, you know, like the news and all these things, but just in general, as a business, you don't want to make mistakes because whether it's accountability or having to admit that you made a mistake, there's just, you have to live with the consequences. Mm-hmm. But when we don't make mistakes, I was reading the book, The Talent Code, mm-hmm. the other night, and it talked about the ways that our brain learns is through intentionally making mistakes over and over and over again and learning from them, so that our brain can actually increase the rate of operating in that skill.
Yep.
And it just blew my mind.
Yeah. You know, and that's because I'll talk about, that's the science of leadership that I talk about, where the brain, how the brain starts to rewire itself, which it can, mm-hmm. you know, so the excuse for all those people out there who are acting the fool and say, well, that's just how I'm wired. Well, no, you wired yourself that way. There's a way to unwire it. But so when we talk about mistakes though, you know, from a leadership perspective, here's why we can't be afraid of mistakes in outcome. Because we can never control the outcome. Now, what I want to tell people, though, is this is why we follow process. Because what you do may or may not work. Mm-hmm. If it does work or doesn't work, what you want to have is a process that you can go back to and identify why it worked or why it didn't work. Okay, so if something didn't work, And you tell me, well, I just act on intuition. I said, well, we've got to flush that out because you can't, first of all, as a leader, you can't teach intuition. Second of all, as a leader, you can't hold people accountable to your intuition on how you think things should be done. But third of all, intuition does not allow you a very definable place to go back and say, where did I miss this? Mm-hmm. So I focus on decision-making process.
Nice.
Okay. So again, somebody might say, if we go through the process, all right, I have a trigger. This thing makes me angry. That's my emotion. Mm-hmm. Most people just go trigger to emotion to action, right? They're not thinking. Mm-hmm. And now I say, well, that's great. Now the results are left to the flip of a coin because you made a decision without acknowledging the emotion that was driving your decision. Mm-hmm. So then what we talk about is we say trigger, there's an emotion, it's anger. Now I need to think and decide. Think there's a lot that goes on inside of think and decide, and we, you know, maybe we get into it, maybe we don't, but then we act. Now, you might say, but Errol, I want to act on my anger. I'll say, that's fine. It's not my place to say whether you should act on your anger or not. It's my place to ensure that it's a conscious decision. So now you have this trigger, this emotion, you think and decide, you say, I'm going to act on the anger, you act, and it's an unmitigated disaster. Right? It just, everything goes wrong. Human resources is up your tail. You got a lawsuit coming in. You're like, oh my God. So now when we talk about intuition, now we're learning something. When we make conscious decisions, you say, okay, I can't trust that emotion anymore, anger, to act on it because look at what happened. So the next time I have that trigger and that emotion, anger, I need to take a real pause. Because the last time I consciously acted on it, the results were terrible. Let me try something different this time. Okay, that is where we start to build intuition, right? The intuition needs to come second based in process, not first.
Yeah.
So again, the decision you made may or may not work. Hey, that welcome to it. That's just the way it goes. But the process will always tell you where it went right and where it went wrong. And that's why process is so important. I know people get afraid of the word process because they feel it's so confining. And it's not. When people tell me that, and they tell me that all the time, I say, you're mistaking a big idea for the execution of that big idea. Okay. Those are two different things. Free-flowing big ideas, you know, go for it, whatever. But if you have a big idea, you need a very methodical, unemotional process to execute that thing. And that's just, you know, that's where my experience in kind of the, you know, the dangerous situations I've been in comes into play, right? People can relate to it. When I say everything I do has process, and I was doing things like jumping out of the plane in the middle of the night to the middle of the ocean with all our gear, right? You don't just come up with that idea and say, woohoo, let's go do it. You say, all right, that's a cool idea. Now, how do we effectively execute that idea? And that takes work. That takes process.
Right. I love that distinction between mistakes in the process versus mistakes in the outcome.
That's right.
And I appreciate that so much because it brings a lot of clarity to what you're talking about earlier as leadership within. So not only do you have a business process where, you know, you follow these steps to do your work, but having that process within so that when you have that intuitive moment, you can then connect it back to your process, saying, what stage of the process am I in?
Yep.
And what role does intuition play in that stage? Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the beautiful part is the process is the same whether you're doing it internally, whether you're doing it for a large group and a large, you know, operation that's going on. It's the same all the time. You go through the same steps. And that, and the other thing is, when you make your mistake, because you will, right? Mm-hmm. If you're doing stuff, you're going to make mistakes. When you have process, you can explain it, right? Mm-hmm. Not make an excuse for it. You can explain it though. Errol, why in the world did you yell and scream at these people? And now we have all these human resources issues. We're getting sued. You can say, look, it was a bad decision, but here's my process. Mm-hmm. Right? This thing that happened, it made me angry. And I recognized that it kept happening over and over again. And I was acting certain ways and it wasn't resonating. So I made a conscious decision to act on my anger. Now, it didn't work, but I want you to know that that was my thought process. Mm-hmm. Now, look, when things go wrong, you have to suffer the consequences sometimes. But again, that logical explanation at least allows people to say, okay, I see it. You just weren't acting like a madman. Makes sense. I still have to fire you, but I get it. Right? But that's okay too, because you walk away as an individual for the better anyway. Because now again, you've got that reservoir of things that are happening, and then you start to build your intuitive muscle.
Mm, that's great. I love the way that you're describing process. And since process plays a huge part in your book, can you go a little deeper into the process of leadership?
Yeah. So, and what I kind of developed it based on the good, the bad, and the ugly of everything I've ever done. And when I looked back on it, right, you know, as I started my company, I said, well, I've got to deliver a message. And so what is my message and what do I really believe, right? It was a true moment. And so I had to go back through everything that good, bad, and ugly that happened in my life. And you start to realize, and I knew I realized it back then, that all of the circumstances, there was still an element of each process in every aspect of my life and everything that I did. And it was really interesting. So again, I have five elements to the process. The first two are emotional awareness and recognition and cultural awareness and recognition. Okay. Mm-hmm. And because that's what we describe, we start with that emotion because that emotion drives our action. So we have to be aware of the emotion. And then the action that it drives is literally what our culture is, right? So we have to be aware of what we do. Mm-hmm. Okay. Culture is made up of the things we do, not the labels we put on them. And that first couple phases are an awareness. Because until we have an awareness of what we're feeling and what we're doing, and not without judgment, right? This is really what I do. Ooh, I don't like that too much. Then we can't make the positive adjustments. So those are the first couple elements. So then what's next? We have this awareness where we're looking at all these ugly things we feel and do, and now we're aware of it. We go, oh my God, now how do I want to behave? Guidelines for behavior. And it's in context now for you. That's the art, right? Now that behavior. So you might come to say, well, I need to act with more courage. Okay, and that's fine. But we can't just say that to everybody, right? Because if I said to you, Chris, you need to act with more courage, you might be like, Errol, go to hell. I act with, what are you talking about? Right? Because it's not in context. But maybe people are afraid to make decisions, right? Because, you know, for whatever it is, maybe people are afraid to address somebody in a certain manner. Maybe people are afraid to do certain things. And we've acknowledged that based on the discussion through the awareness of what they do based on how they feel. Now we can say, what's your behavior? Okay, if you didn't change the way you made, marketed, or sold your widget, but you behaved in this way, would you get better? A behavior that will affect every aspect of your life. Okay, and then we only focus on a couple, right? Because one or two good behaviors will solve a lot of problems. And at the end of the day, let's just say we use that courage example, because this person is showing that they're lacking courage in certain things and it has a detrimental effect. So at the end of the day, they should be able to ask themselves, today, did I act with courage? And they should be able to very specifically explain how they did or how they didn't. Boom, now we're getting somewhere, right? Now the process is working for you. Behavioral guidelines. Again, it's not industry-specific things. It's behaviors where industry-specific things might fall under. And there'll be, there's a million of them. Okay, so we've got that now, right? Now, so now we're starting to behave how we want to behave as a leader. But in the end, leaders need to get results. Okay, leaders need to drive results and they need to do it successfully. And to do that, you need to have a plan. So all I did was take the planning process we used in the SEAL teams. I modified it. I watered it down. I made it very simple. And what I'll tell you is if you follow this planning process, you will either find success or you will understand why you won't find success. And now you will reconsider doing what you were going to do because the planning process is telling you where it will go wrong. Okay, so that's the next element, right? So far it's making sense that now you can see why we call it a process because we can go through all of these things. And then at the end, it's just something I call the resistance. And the resistance is a lot, it's a lot of different things. Mostly it's everything I just explained to you, Chris. Hopefully you're like, yeah, that makes perfect sense, right? Mm-hmm. It's logical. Motions are our actions, that's culture. Then we have to decide how we want to behave, behavioral guidelines, and we make a plan and we execute. And if I say this to you and then I see that you don't do any of it, I think to myself, well, why? Why not? Or you might think to yourself, why am I not following this very logical process? Well, it's because it's something new. And we're going to resist it because it's not what we're used to doing. And that's, you know, that's really where the science comes into it. This is going to be a new way of thinking and a new way of acting. And our body, like that neurochemical addiction we have to certain emotions, will fight change. If we're aware of that, if we're aware of the resistance, the things that force us or make us to not do what we know we should do, and we know that is really a neurochemical thing, that's a science, we can give ourselves a little grace. We can give ourselves a little patience and say, all right, I just have to keep working through this. It's okay that I'm making mistakes, or it's okay that I'm struggling. I know why. It's not because I'm lazy. It's not because I'm obstinate. It's because I've been doing things one way for so long. I don't even care anymore whether it's the right way or the wrong way. It's just the way that I'm used to.
Right.
So to change that is going to be hard. As a leader, it's also important in recognizing the resistance in others. Right? So we may, somebody might say, Errol, I love your process and I'm going to start following it. And then they start implementing it. And now people are just ignoring what you're saying, okay? Instead of taking it personally as a leader and then getting upset, we can say, well, this is just part of the process. The resistance, they're just, I'm asking people to change behaviors. It's going to take a little while. They're not being just purposely defiant at me. This is an internal struggle going on. And again, that allows you to give other people grace and other people a little, you know, a little room for growth, okay? And then, you know, how we deal with all that, we talk about later, but that's the process. Those elements are existent in everything you do in your life. I promise you that if you told me something, Chris, that you did that went sideways, I would look into one of the elements of this process and say, okay, you made an overly emotional decision, right? Or you weren't aware of what you were doing. And then you made a plan based on actions that you weren't aware of. Well, no wonder, even if you had a good plan, you weren't aware of what you were doing or why you were doing it. So you were acting on the wrong thing, right? Or, you know, whatever it is, you wanted to hold someone accountable. Why weren't my people weren't doing these things? Well, you can't hold someone accountable if they don't know what they're supposed to be accountable to. Typically, we start with behavioral guidelines. I expect us as a team to behave in this way, right? So we make it clear. So maybe you missed that. Anyway, I promise you that any failure you will have missed a spot in this process. And it bears out true every time I go through it. And that's, you know, as I started it, you're always afraid, is this going to work? And now that I've done it long enough, it's always present. So I'm not even sure what question I was asking. I just get pretty excited about talking about this. So
no, you were on point. We were talking about process.
All right. Okay, good. Well, what question you were asking. So, all right, good. As long as I answer.
That's great. I have to admit, I was tracking with you through all of them. I'm like, awareness, check. Behavioral guidelines, check. You know, plan and results, check, check. I was surprised when you said resistance at the end. And as you were describing, I'm like, why is that at the end? Why is that not at the beginning and all these stages? But really, resistance is in all of those stages in some form or another.
Yep, 100%. It will. I mean, imagine, okay, imagine you, me and you started working together, and this happens all the time, mostly with the men, and we start bringing up this emotions thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, Errol, I'm not an emotional person. I don't have, you know, and it's like, you're not an emotional person. What does that mean? You don't have emotions, or are mm-hmm. you suggesting that you just react to emotions differently? Right. So the amount of work I have to do sometimes with people to get past the resistance of acknowledging their emotions is overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And then even if I get to that, then we go to cultural awareness. Tell me what you're doing. Just, you know, well, so there's a lot of excuses. Well, I have to do it that way because, well, hold on a second. You're getting ahead of ourselves, right? Why are you so afraid just to tell me what you do? Why are you so afraid to tell me that, you know what, you interrupt people when they talk, or you talk past people, or that you micromanage? Why are we struggling with that? Well, it's just the resistance, right? So the resistance is present with each element of the process. I just have to put that somewhere. So I just put it right at the end because it's just, right? Because yeah. You know, it typically, you know, we typically let people know at some point. I throw in the science, and you know, if I'm meeting resistance early on, we'll talk about the science, mm-hmm. and that usually lightens people up a little bit. Yeah. They'll say, okay, I guess that does make sense, and I guess all right, you know, so whatever it is. So yeah.
I understand the structural need for things, and I appreciate the flexibility in it, because you're absolutely right. I mean, if it's almost like if it wasn't flexible, it would probably break under the stress of applying it in different situations.
Yeah, it's completely flexible because it's all based in awareness. You know, right out of out of the gate, your first question, you know, what do I think of leadership? And again, awareness is just the common denominator, awareness of what's happening with inside yourself, your environment, your people. Once you have an awareness, then you can make a good decision. So if you think about, especially in today's atmosphere, and this is not, you know, what I don't do in my leadership practice is tell people they're right or wrong to believe what they believe. Okay, so people don't know, my clients don't know what I believe personally about a lot of subjects, about a lot of social things that are happening today. And they'll never know. Because the second I say, well, I agree with this movement or that movement, or I disagree with it, then they can't trust that I'm being objective in guiding them in the process. You know, I just wanted to caveat that because I don't want to let anybody think that I'm making a stand one way or the other for all of the issues that we're facing today. But what I can tell you is this, is that if you look at some of the actions that people are making, and they're probably planning their actions, right? So we're going to culture, right? What am I doing? And I want results, so I'm making a plan. So much of what's happening is being based on emotion, unacknowledged emotion, rage, right? Rage from the past, whether that past affected you or not. You have gotten locked into it, and now you're raging about it, and now you're going to make a plan to do something based on the rage. And now that plan is having, it's not having the effect that you want it to. It's having ill effects, whatever it is, right? And then you say, well, Errol, having a plan doesn't really work because look what happened. I would say, yeah, no, but you didn't follow the process because you made a plan based on an overly emotional decision, on an emotion that you weren't aware of. If you had acknowledged that you were raging, and then decided, but how do I want to act? How do I want to behave? You might have made a different plan. Okay, you might have done something differently, but we'll never know because you had an outcome based on an action, based on an emotion that you were unaware of. So of course it didn't work out. So yeah, again, once again, that's the process. I hope that's a good example of, right, the flexibility of it to say, yeah, but I made a plan, Errol. Yeah, but you didn't follow the first two elements. You made a plan based on the wrong stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate that a lot too, because we often start with a plan, especially I'll just use creative entrepreneurship as an example. You know, I can look back at the last 14 years of running my own business. And it's like, I don't know how many plans I have made in the last 14 years, but they always came first before awareness, behavior, and all of that. And
that's right.
Most of them fell apart.
Yep.
Yep. And I appreciate you explaining why.
Yeah. And look, there might be, you know, plans. So there's now, you know, elements to the planning process. The acronym is SMAC. I hate that acronym, but it is what it is. Situation, mission, actions, command, contingencies, communication. And I won't go into what each one means because, you know, it'll probably get a little boring. But if you miss one of those elements of the planning process, you will likely fail. Okay. Because those are, now why does that matter? And this is why my background helps a lot. You say, how does you being a Navy SEAL help me in my business background? Well, here's the thing. In combat, whether it's traditional combat like I saw in Afghanistan or various forms of combat when I worked counterterrorism in the FBI, right? That's a form of combat. Whether you're working on the streets, you're looking to get intelligence, that's combat. If you don't do things correctly in those situations, we suffer consequences. Mm-hmm. And usually those consequences are mission failure, injury, or death. And those are all unacceptable. Okay. Mm-hmm. So to avoid mission failure, injury, or death, we follow a very specific planning process because we know that if we cover each one of those elements, we are likely to succeed. Okay. That's born in blood, literally. Mm-hmm. And if we miss one of those elements, we are likely to fail. And that's born in blood. That's not my opinion. Okay. That's a fact. The beauty of it is these elements that I just described to you are applicable in every aspect of our life. So if it's good enough for me as a leader to achieve victory, to keep people safe and to keep people alive on the battlefield, I think you should, you know, it's worth considering when you walk into your house and how you're going to plan about being a good husband or mother or son or father, because that planning process is there then too. More important than, you know, because I'll have people tell me, oh my God, Errol, what? I walk into my house, I've got to make a plan with how I'm going to interact with my wife. And I said, well, if that interaction is important to you, which it should be the most important interaction, yes, you need to make a plan. What is the situation? My wife is super stressed from a long day with the kids. Okay, that's the situation. What am I going to do? What's my mission? My mission is to relieve her stress. What will I do? I will take the kids away. I'll listen to her, right? That's a plan. That's a plan based on an awareness of what's happening around you, right? So it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I appreciate just how succinctly you take what could easily just be theory and make it applicable instantly. That's great.
And I get that a lot. Not a lot. I've gotten it before. So I've spoken to, you know, groups, large groups. And so you're kind of on the spot when somebody asks you a question. Mm-hmm. And I had somebody tell me one time, Errol, this all looks good in theory, but I think it's kind of pie in the sky. And that's fine. I don't get insulted. And what I'm able to do is say, it's not, because this is not theory. This is all based on my real world experience. And then again, you can hit them between the eyes with some combat experiences, and that opens people's eyes, right? They understand, oh, wait a second. He did tell me he built this thing based on experience, and now he's showing me again and telling me again. So it's theory, but it's all theory that comes from practical experience.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's theory that has stood up to the question, how do you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
I appreciate something that you said earlier about going through the process of the message and the values as you approached your business and your book. What did you learn about yourself as you wrote and released the book, which is called The Process, Art, and Science of Leadership?
Boy, a lot. You know, here's the first thing I learned. I don't know if I necessarily learned it about myself, but I learned that I will never do again. I will never criticize anybody else's writing ever again, right? Especially a book. I may not like the book. I'm allowed not to like the book, right? I may not agree with the book. I'm allowed not to agree with the book, but I will never say that was garbage ever, because putting you want to talk about vulnerability and putting yourself out there when you're putting all of your thoughts up to scrutiny. So, some good things. I learned that I have the conviction of my message. Because otherwise, if you don't, you don't put it out there, right? Mm-hmm. You don't. You find an excuse not to. So that was a good thing. I learned that I have some real insecurities about my message. Well, what happens if people don't like it? What happens if they don't believe it? What happens if they disagree with me? What happens if they make fun of me? What happens if they call me a fraud? Right? All these things that I have no reason to think people would do. Mm-hmm. But you see the real human side of yourself, the real frailty of yourself when you put what you think on paper and then put it out there for everybody to judge. Mm-hmm. So, good and bad. I learned that I have all those deep-seated fears and insecurities. But fortunately, that my process allowed me to go through and say, okay, that's cool, Errol. You're super insecure about this right now. That's allowed. But now what do you want to do? How do you want to behave? See, again, courage. I have to have some courage with this, right? I have to have trust. I have to trust myself, right? Mm-hmm. All those things. So I would say right out of the gate, right? Never again will I criticize another book. I am happy that I have conviction in my process and the courage to put it out there. But it also made me very aware of my own frailties when it comes to emotions and insecurities.
Yeah. What I appreciate about that answer is that it answers an underlying question that I think a lot of creative entrepreneurs could have when they consider leadership and consider their own work. And, you just said it, you had your own insecurities, regardless of the life that you've lived. Words on paper triggered those insecurities.
That's right.
But you were able to work through it for many reasons, process. But the one thing that I want to touch on that just hit me right between the eyes, conviction of your message. Mm-hmm. That's powerful right there.
I believe in it. I believe in it as much as I believe in everything. And it's interesting when you put it together, like I said earlier, you're like, God, I hope this works. I'm going to give this to somebody else who's going to pay me good money and trust me to give this a test drive. I knew in my heart it would, but there's still that insecurity, right? But you go forward, you follow the process, right? How am I feeling? How am I acting? How do I want to act? Blah, blah, blah. And the more I see it help people, for people who embrace it with an open heart and an open mind, I'm like, it does work. I knew it would. And now I'm helping people. And then the conviction grows and grows and grows. And so I just get so excited to say to people, not you have to do it this way, all right? But just please give it a test drive. Take it for a ride. See what you think. And, the conviction grows. I just believe in leadership almost more than I believe in anything else, right? When we have, when there's so much hate and we need love, the leader will go through this process and figure out how to turn the hate into love. They will do it, I promise you. When we have chaos instead of order, good, clean order, the leader will see the chaos, work the process, turn it around, and put it into order, right? Order that people will love. When we have family problems, leadership solves those problems. When we have business problems, leadership solves those problems. When we have personal problems, whether it's with a spouse, a friend, a coworker, or it's a personal problem we're having with ourselves, leadership and the process will solve it. I have that conviction. And you can't do this job. People just aren't going to trust you with their money or their time if you don't have that conviction. So I hope that it shows through. Conviction and process.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that so much, because in the back of my mind, and I hope other people listening to this right now are thinking the same thing I am, do I have conviction in my own message?
Yeah.
And I think that's an important question to be considering on a consistent basis. Probably not every day, but you know, just to have that maybe part of the process, you know, that check-in. Am I acting out of conviction?
Yeah, you know, but it can be every day because it goes to some intention too. So we talk about, let's go back. We talk about that ice bath. Mm-hmm. Do you, you know, understanding your own personal guideline for behavior is hard to do, right? That's why I'm saying there's a real art to it. It takes a lot of digging. How do I want to behave? Yeah. And do I have conviction in that behavior? So, you know, again, there's just so much. We're just covering the surface and scratching the surface. But do I have conviction in the gratitude I feel for my life, for my circumstance? Because gratitude is such a, I don't want to say an overused word, but I sometimes wonder if people truly know what it means and what it should mean. And do you truly have the conviction of your gratitude? Do you truly have gratitude for the things that you have? Because if you have gratitude, you'll get more. Because that's right. That's the universe. That's you speaking to the universe. I am grateful for what I have, and I am grateful for what will come to me, right? Good, bad, or otherwise. All of a sudden, great things happen, but you have to have conviction in that. And that is something you can challenge to yourself every day. Do I have conviction of courage? Do I have conviction of empathy, right? Do you have conviction of these things? Because just to say it's not enough. And that's why there's an arc behind the behaviors that we need to establish for ourselves. We need to have conviction in them so they positively impact other parts of our life.
That is awesome. I can't think of a better way to end our conversation, Errol, than ending on that note.
Good.
Before we wrap up, the last question that I have for you is, what book, podcast, or resource, apart from your own, is blowing your mind?
I've recently gotten into biometrics and fasting. So all things related to them. Fasting has changed so much of my life, you know, and I didn't know, right? I got turned onto it by my wife, who got turned onto it by her sister and her husband. And fasting has become a integral part of my life. And then the biometrics, right? The heart rate variability and your readiness. So I've got this Oura ring, right? Now we check it out and you get to look at what's happening in your system based on the things that you do, i.e., are you drinking too much? Are you not getting enough sleep? Now there's the data. So I've become recently obsessed with that. And then, of course, how all that relates to the process, the leadership process. But yeah, that's kind of my new thing these days, biometrics and fasting.
That's awesome. Well, Errol, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work and sharing all things leadership. I have learned so much in this conversation, and I can't wait to share it with the world. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it, Chris. Thank you for your time and giving me the opportunity to share my message.
One thing Errol mentioned that was intriguing was that one or two good behaviors will solve a lot of problems. I really like the idea that I don't need to fix everything. And by having the freedom to just pick one or two things that you want to change can actually help so much. So pick one thing that really bothers you and see if you can change your behaviors around that issue. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.